Blog Talk Radio.
With Changing Faces Athletics Program. I am unable to answer your phone call at this moment. However,
okay, seems like we had a couple, but we're back online, and we do have Mr. Rodriguez in the queue. So, Ernesto, how are we doing tonight?
I'm doing well, Mr. King. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing fine. Now that I have these little technical difficulties done, the sun is shining out here in California, so I am good. Hoping your weather is just as good up there in out there in Baltimore, that area.
Oh yeah, it's a little chilly, but you know, earlier it was a little bit warmer. It wasn't as bad as it is now. You know, it's a little chill, but the weather's starting to break. So far, yeah. So good.
Yeah, we were hoping that you guys weren't a victim of what they were talking about, some of the flooding and whatnot. I know that region has been kind of prone to that with all of the rain and the different storms and the snow and whatnot. So hopefully, you guys will come through all right. But let's talk a little boxing. And I asked you about one of your fighters because, usually we don't like to talk about losses. But kind of encouraged us to talk about what happened to Mr. Quarles in his bout, because normally he looks a lot better than that. I thought, he looked a whole leg weary, and he just had problem throwing punches in the later rounds. Did something happen during the training, or was he dehydrated? Can you kind of take us through what happened?
Well, what happened, we had a pretty good training camp, I was checking his weight during earlier the training camp, and it was, normally he was within 10 pounds of the limit before weighing, but something odd happened the last 2 days before weighing, and I knew there was an issue, and I just couldn't quite understand why he didn't bring it to me, but it appeared that he was overweight, and because at the time I was training multiple fighters, him, Mark, had some other fighters, Speed, and some other guys in the gym that we were training for. Five amateurs that were in the semifinal, Golden Gloves. Did not put my eyes on the scale. And the day before the weigh-in, he didn't show up to the hotel room. And it's kind of odd because it's customary that we check the weight with the actual scale. They're going to weigh in to get the accurate weight. And he failed to appear. He actually stayed home with his lady, with his wife, at the hotel. So that night we didn't work out. And then the next day for the weigh-in, he showed up nearly almost an hour late, scheduled time. And come to find out, when we got on the scale, he was a pound 1.60. And once he got off there, I asked him what happened. I thought he was on scale. Well, he told me he was at home trying to lose weight on his own, which was a big no-no. I mean, we professionals. We know how to make weight relatively easy. But for whatever, I don't understand why he chose not to let me know so we could help him out. So we ended up working him out, and between the workout he did on his own and the workout we did, apparently it drained him so much that he pretty much was flat for the fight. He couldn't get off. He was just drained. And, you know, the biggest fight that he had at the moment, you know, take him to the next step forward, you know, he failed to capitalize on it and, you know, lost the decision. It was not the Brandon that I know, the Brandon that was in training camp. Just lackluster performance, no energy level. But, you know, I think it's something that as a professional we all have to acknowledge that, you know, we all have to play our part, including myself. I learned from that instance that no matter how many fighters I'm training for, I had to put my eyes on everyone. You know, something that I felt that I could trust the fighter, but, you know, I'm still learning, and I learned that I can't leave it up to the fighter to tell me that they weigh this much. I have to put my eyes on it. I think it's, as a trainer, I have to realize that I have to see it. And that's a lesson that I learned, you know, and I think he understands that, you know, this is a team effort. You can't do the thing on your own, whether you feel bad that, you know, you haven't been doing what you're supposed to be doing. And the weight, you know, was up high. You know, he should have notified me. But before all of that, I didn't tell you guys that Brandon's mom was murdered in January 1st. She was killed by a friend of hers. And that put him in a state of mind that that he was depressed, and we contemplated not fighting, but he wanted to fight, so we accepted a fight for March 24th. You know, but that was something that you know we talked about, and he decided he wanted to get the fight, but you know, as he stated to me, he felt that it was just too early for him to fight. You know, they want to make excuses, but he really wasn't focused. And when I sit back and listen to what he told me after the fight, kind of makes sense of his performance and how everything went. You know, I can understand how that really bothered him and, you know, interfered with the performance and the preparation mentally, more mental than anything. So, you know, we pray that he recovers well from all those things, and hopefully we can get him back on track, get him a few fights, and, you know, see how we'd be able to move him forward in the near future.
I know, you know, that you have a lot of concern for your fighters, so have you thought about some type of counseling for him? I know there's, you know, we've had young individuals from the Parkland shooting that have survivor's remorse and you know, mm-hmm. have taken their own lives. So have you thought about, you know, perhaps putting him in some kind of counseling like that?
Yeah, I think, I believe he advised me that he went to some counseling. He was on it. I think his wife had went with him as well. So he has, I don't know if he's continued doing it, but I know he's doing it. I don't know if he finished or he's still doing it, but I know he did attend some counseling in reference to that matter.
Well, I can tell you, you know, even at this particular part, you know, time in my life, I've still had to go at certain times back to, you know, my PT. SD awareness and anger management, because sometimes those things do surface. Our condolences go out, and I do, you know, have a deep understanding for what he's going through. But let's try to change the mood here and talk a little bit more about the sport that we love. You did mention that you had some amateurs, and we've just seen, the head of the IOC or whatever it is, the Olympic Boxing Commission, step down. You talked about your amateurs. Is this in any way affected the way that you look at going forward and putting an Olympic team forth?
For me, no. I don't look at it. I mean, I try to just the main thing is to try to get them the experience. The international experience is good for any fighter to have, to get the opportunity to compete against different styles, different countries, and which will prepare them for the professional. So I don't really, focus too much on that committee, the USA Boxing Committee, and the reality that they're going through. I know it's kind of tough. I mainly focus on trying to get the young guys the experience, the bouts, the styles, the matchups, contracts and styles, so they can get the experience. So once they, decide to make the professional route, they'll be rounded enough to be able to have the opportunity to excel. So I try to just focus on getting them guys, getting them some experience. I have some young guys that are looking to turn pro probably by the end of the year, first year next year. And, we're just trying to get as many fights as we can, whether it be on a national level, local level. Excuse me, just getting the rounds in. And, I believe it's important for them to for the preparation to the professional level.
Now, I saw something a few months ago that really caught my eye, because it was something that caught me completely by surprise, and that was Barry Hunter training a female fighter. Have you entertained any thoughts, or do you have any female fighters in your gym?
We have a few young ladies that are training there. They're young, still brand new amateurs that are interested in competing. The young lady, I believe, Barry Hunter trains, Franchon Cruz. She's the
WB. Yes, sir.
She just won the title. I've been knowing Franchon since she was, back in the amateurs. She's always been a very hard competitor, very dedicated young lady. She's a very pleasant person to know, to speak. And she's fierce in the ring. So she's definitely been around for a while, and she joined the Headbangers team some time ago. So she just got opportunity to blossom. I mean, I know she had she fought Clarissa Shield and lost her fight, but that's because, she's just that much of a competitor that, she chose to stepped up to the challenge when nobody wanted to fight her. She took the loss and, ran back to the drawing board. Now she's a world champion herself. So, kudos to her for, perseverance and believing in herself and just staying committed to her goal. And now she had achieved, the goal that most men and women in boxing like to achieve, and that's to become world champion. Hopefully, in the near future, she achieves wealth which comes with being a world champion and many other things. So I know her personally, so I wish Franchon nothing but best wishes and success in this sport.
Yeah, we've actually had her on the show before. So, yeah, we had her on the show even before she moved down to the Headbangers. I believe her husband's a boxer also.
Glenn.
Yeah. Yeah, so, as we said, kudos to them. And kind of bringing forth, a rather sad moment for me, because Lamont was actually one of the very first fighters that I had a chance to interview and talk to back when he was the champ. And he was actually at the Cosmopolitan in Las Vegas.
Okay.
And it was very sad to see the way that fight went. I kind of thought, and I don't know, man. Maybe as a fan, or maybe because I was a fan of Lamont, I kind of, when I looked at his posture during during Anthony's fight,
mm-hmm.
and you could see the kind of bewilderment on his face, and you could see that things really weren't the way that he wanted them to go. And I
mm-hmm.
had said that before that bout, I thought that he might have been affected by the way that Anthony had that draw, just as I felt Charlo had been affected by his brother's loss.
Mm-hmm.
And what are your thoughts on that? I mean, I don't really like to see, I know it, you know, maybe from a promotional aspect, it's good to have brothers on the card. But when you have brothers, I think there's a little too much emotional involved, even though we're all professionals. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, I can see that happening. They're close brothers. They're very, very close-knit. And I believe that when something happens to one, it can affect the other mentally. I mean, it's a possibility that could have happened. I mean, you have to be very, very strong-willed to, you know, kind of overlook that and get past that just that quick. I don't know if that was the case, but I can see that happening. I mean, Lamont and Anthony are very close with each other. And the draw, I was ringside. I saw it. I thought Anthony won the fight. But, you know, there was one judge, the local judge, voted against the local fighter. you know, it's kind of odd. Not that he voted against him because he was local, but because I thought Anthony won the fight. I mean, that was just my perspective of it. But, you know, judges see things different, and, you know, I don't like to criticize any judge for what they see. I just speak from what I see. You know, it definitely could have affected Lamont's state of mind going into the fight. I mean, that's something that could have happened, you know.
I mean, Lamont's a great fighter, but you know, this was the second time that has happened to him, and as he mentioned, you know, it happened from a punch that he didn't see. He didn't see coming, you know, and usually, you know, earlier in his career, he would have been prepared for that. He stayed in the pocket a little,
right,
too long, even though, you know, he was the bigger fighter. But just your thoughts in general on his retirement as a great fighter from the D.C. area.
Well, he had a 15-year career, which is a long career in the sport of boxing. He's definitely an ambassador for the sport of boxing, the DNBA, former champion. He's definitely, from my point of view, definitely a man that has represented the sport of boxing well, inside and outside of the ring. From what I know, my sentiment in dealing with him, he's always been very respectful, always very athletic, always prepared for a fight. You know, he's definitely one of the top guys in our area to become champion. I salute him for what he's done in the sport of boxing here. You know, he's a very humble guy, very approachable. I've seen him working with kids, approaching Jared Herr when we first were coming up. We used to go to the Headbangers often for all of our fights. And he will voluntarily spar with Jared, although Jared was a little bit bigger than him. He will come in and spar with him, and, you know, in between sparring, he'll stop and say, "Hey, try this, do that." It's like he was coaching, you know, just lending a helping hand. And I always looked at him different for doing that, because not too many champions were, and this one he was champion, not too many champions will do that. Most, you know, from what I've seen, a lot of people, they champions, they get off on the lesser fighter. Right? But I never saw that from him. I always saw him being more of an educator. He's a humble guy. And I always, I still do, I always respected him for that because of the type of fighter and the way he conducted himself. You know, hey, man, he represented not just the DMV area, but he represented boxing very, very well. And, you know, it was a tough fight to see. You know, Lamont, I've seen Lamont box, I mean, for 12 rounds. I've seen him move and to the point where you can't even hit him. I've seen him spar 15 rounds, sometimes up to 18 rounds on his toes. So the capabilities of him being able to do that are there. Why he chose to fight that fight, you know, toe-to-toe, I mean, that's, you know, something that you have to ask him. But I know that he's more than capable. He was more than capable to fight on the outside, use his high reach and size advantage, and would have made that fight much, much easier. But, you know, he chose to go toe-to-toe and make it a grueling fight, a very hostile environment. And, you know, eventually, you know, it wore him down and he paid a price for it. But, you know, this is boxing, so, you know, we could second guess a lot of things when we see it. But, you know, the fighters are in there fighting. They know. Sometimes we don't know why they do the things that they do. But, man, overall, he's just been a great fighter, a good person, a good fighter. I mean, from my perspective, I have nothing but good things to say about him. You know, his story from a childhood. I've been knowing the kid since he was like 13 years old. So, you know, I've been watching him growing up from now till, you know, the grown man that he is. So I've been knowing the kid that long. Lamar, been knowing him that long. And, you know, it's good to see him, you know, go through the amateur ranks and go into the pros, become a world champion. And, you know, in his career, but, you know, I would rather see him in his career a little bit better than the way it ended. But, you know, hey, we don't predict, we don't have the authority to predict anything. Just it's just truly a blessing that he's okay. You know, he's not, didn't receive any damages, anything like that. And, you know, I wish him nothing but success outside of boxing. He definitely has a lot to give back. Whether he decides to be a coach or just a person involved in boxing, in the business of boxing, you know, he definitely has a lot to give back to the sport of boxing. So hopefully we see him on a platform besides being a fighter, you know, in a different format.
Hey, if Timothy Bradley can be a commentator, so can Lamont. I'm just saying. You know, that's just my opinion. But anyway,
I agree. He's better looking. Let's just say that.
But anyway, you know, speaking of gentlemen that have made great strides, and we've seen him behind the microphone, I want to give Jared a big thumbs up for the way that he's grown behind the mic and been able to analyze fights. It was kind of apropos to see Jared at this fight when, you know, it seems like, you know, now, you know, we've uncrowned one legend in the D.C. area, and now we have another one upcoming, Mr. Hurd. So talk to us a little bit about your champion.
Oh, man, listen, it's definitely good to see Jared blossom into the person that he is right now. I mean, he's still a young man on top of the throne right now. He's the best in the division, and he did a phenomenal job commentating. He's a good-looking kid. He's charismatic. He's humble. He's the people's champ. I think he has a career in commentating for sure. I'm just happy to see him grow from the young kid who walked in the gym at 15 years old, who knew only to throw a good 1-2, And, you know, he's now not just a unified champion. He showed that he can be a person in TV commentating. He speaks in public venues. He, you know, dealt with other celebrities, Redskins, amongst other celebrities he's met. Man, he's doing well, man. He's doing an awesome job. I'm just really proud of him. You know, it's truly a blessing to see this kid that I've had the opportunity to develop into the fighter that he is today. Along the line, we definitely had some help. I think everyone can say they help. I mean, from the guys in the gym who tells him to throw the jab and keep his hands up, to somebody holding the legs for him to do his sit-ups, somebody motivating him to run, waking him up. I think that everybody deserves to say that they played a part into Jared's development, and I welcome that. But for me, I'm just happy to see this kid growing up to be the man that he is today, and I'm just glad that I can say that, you know, I've been a huge part of of his development from day one until now, in which I'm still the chief trainer. And, you know, it's a pleasure for me to continue to play that position until, you know, the day that it comes to an end, man. You know, I will have no regrets. So, you know, God has truly, truly blessed me and continues to bless me with the ability to think, to react, to speak, to walk, and to lead by example with my own family, children, and the kids in the gym. So I'm just thankful, man, to see Jared. He's my first professional fighter that I have had and my first champion. So I think I hit the Super Bowl the first time. And I look at it like that. And then, you know, to see him progressing the way he is, you know, it really makes me proud to see him do that. I think that, you know, God has used me to be a good steward for him and to serve him, to serve God in a way that that I really get an enjoyment to see him do well and, you know, be blessed financially at the same time when he fights. So it's truly a blessing. It's a dream come true. It's a story that one day hopefully it can be told. And, you know, he's already put his names in the book, not just as a champion, but as the seventh unified world champion in the division. So, hey, man, sky's the limit, man. I hope that God continues to bless him with much more. And one day when he decides to retire, he goes out, you know, in good standing, with good health and financially secure and amongst all those things.
I do have my next guest in the queue, Mr. Donald Dinkins. I'm not sure if you two gentlemen know each other, but Mr. Dinkins, how are you this evening? Maybe he's not there. But anyway, let's talk a little bit about Jared's next opponent.
Jared's next opponent is Julian J. Rock Williams out of Philadelphia. He has an outstanding record. He has one loss, in which he challenged for the IBF against Jamal Charlo back then at 154 pounds. He was stopped in that bout, but in that bout he showed a great deal of composure, and he was actually doing extremely well before he was abruptly stopped. Since then, he came back and gathered some good wins, some good performance. So he's definitely a solid fighter, a fighter that I don't take lightly at all. I've watched J-Rock throughout the years. I've watched his tapes. I'm studying his tapes now. I think he's going to be a very crafty fighter. I think he is a crafty fighter, and he's going to be a fight that I think the first half is going to be very technical, and you know, we have to impose our will, fighting on him and make him fight our fight. I think that's one of that's going to be a very important key, not to fight his fight, not to make him fight our fight, our pay at our pace, and that will set up for the outcome of the fight later in the rounds. But it's definitely a tough fight, no question about it. Don't take him lightly. I think he's a very good fighter.
Mr. Dinkins, are you in?
Oh, I'm here. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing fine. I do have Ernesto Rodriguez on the line, Jared Hurd's trainer. I don't know if you two gentlemen are familiar with each other or not, but Mr. Dinkins, would you have a question or two with Ernesto before we let him go?
I was just listening to the game plan for the J-Rock fight. You know, I'm a Philly boy just like J-Rock is, and I interviewed him about a year ago. I'm looking forward to the fight, and you know, I don't really have anything to ask him about it. I'm just looking forward to it.
Well, Ernesto, hey man, as always, you know, good to talk to you. You know, anytime I call, you're always available. So, hey, you always show us much love. But tell us, do you have any upcoming events before Jared? Any amateur events or anything that final thoughts that you might have for us before we let you go?
Well, first I would like to thank you for just always inviting me and inviting us and keeping us in mind, giving us the platform from when no one knew us from the beginning, when we were just coming out fighting on TV. You've always been there for us. I always shown a lot of support for Swift and his team, for Jared. And I definitely have to thank you. That's definitely a blessing from above. I'm expected to have two more fighters fighting on April 30th. I believe it's Peter Quillen on the card. I have a young man by the name of Aaron Anderson, who's 4-0 with 3 knockouts, which I manage. And I also manage another young fella named who's 11-1, called Speed Roller, Gervonta Speed Roller. I'm expected to take both of them out there. So we're looking at April 13th going out there in Minnesota. Hopefully everything's finalized soon, and then come right back May 11th here in Virginia for Jared Hurd against Julian Williams. So definitely a busy schedule, but I'd rather stay busy than not be busy. And, you know, definitely looking forward to the fight myself. I think we're going to the fans, fight of the year type candidate. Jared is preparing extremely well for this fight. Only you guys make sure you tune in. You're going to see a dynamic performance, a very strong, strong fighter, mentally and physically strong. The boy is hitting hard as a brick. I think the confidence level is skyrocketing. He's not taking anything for granted. We've been working extensively on the defense. So I'm definitely, as not just as a trainer, but as a fan of boxing, I'm looking to be right there, looking at history being made again. And, man, you know, I really like J-Rock. I think he's a good kid, but, you know, I think that the wrong time to challenge for the title against the wrong fighter. This kid, Jared Hurd, right now is on a whole different level, mentally, physically, spiritually. And it's going to be very, very, very extremely tough to beat him. And not just speaking as his trainer, but just as a boxing fan, as knowledge of boxing, it's going to be hard. But I'm sure that J-Rock is going to bring his best, and we're not going to take nothing for granted. We're going to bring our best, and everybody's a win-win situation for everybody. I'm looking forward to it, and just want to thank you, Mr. King, for always opening up your radios and the ability to give us a voice to the to the fans and to you guys, man. God bless.
Thank you, sir. You have a great night.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Well, that was Mr. Ernesto Rodriguez, trainer for Jared Herd. Always glad to hear from him. Great insight into the loss of by Mr. Brandon Quarles. Usually you don't have trainers talk about those type of situations, but it was great insight. But, Mr. Dinkins, you have been waiting long enough, and we have been running our mouth long enough. So how are you doing this evening?
Oh, I'm doing fine. I got my youngster sitting right here next to me, Devontae McCowan.
Well, you know, I went back to some of your posts on Facebook, and the first one that I noticed was, this is the young man that brought me out of retirement. So,
yes.
the first thing I have to ask you for our fans, what did you see to make you get up out of the rocking chair?
Well, you know, We've been working together for about 5 or 6 years. I started with him when he was 18 years old, and we had these ups and downs. You know, when these youngsters are they're a different breed than what these old time fighters are. You know, they're different than what I'm used to. So I knew the guy. He has a lot of talent, a lot of ability, but it was just a matter of finding the right combination. You know. It took a little while, but we finally got it done, and I think we were apart for almost a year. And I told him at that point that we left something on the table, you know, and it's still unfinished business. And he realized it, and I realized it. And I hadn't heard from him for quite a while, and I heard he was back in the gym. And when I got back with him, I told him, look, we're gonna be serious about it this time, you know, no more breakups, no anything like that. If we're gonna do it, we're gonna do it right. And his whole attitude, his whole disposition was changed. And like I told him, I felt like I left a boy and I came back to a man.
Now, did Devontae have any amateur experience, or I mean, you know, what was your relationship before he turned professional?
We had a couple of amateur fights together. He's always been training at the gym where I train, and I had seen some of his amateur fights, and I liked his style, and he has a lot of punching power, and he's about 5'10½", which is tall for his weight class. He's going to be fighting at 130, and I said that as soon as he learns how to put some leverage on his punches, he's going to be pretty good as a pro, and so that's what really caught my fancy about him. And he was always in the gym, even when he was working by himself. Like, sometimes I'd come to the gym, and he'd just be hitting on the bag. But he would always put in a full 2 hours work, whether anybody was talking to him or not. And so I noticed that dedication. I said, if he's that dedicated without me even breathing down his neck, you know, I should be able to do something with this kid. And I really took the gym. I took it as a challenge. That was the main thing. I took it as a challenge.
Devontae, you say he's there with you. I want to ask him, you know, about his relationship with you and what made him, you know, decide that he wanted you to be his coach, because it's a two-way street.
Absolutely. And he better say the right thing. I'm going to turn you over to him.
All right. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. I'm doing fine. How are you doing, young man?
I got with Don because when we first met, you know, he was my first trainer, and we got a bond, you know. He like a father figure to me, you know. He stick by my side. He always in my corner, and he do a lot for me. He my number one supporter.
We know, you know, fathers and sons. You know, we've seen a lot of those relationships. Some worked, some didn't. Don spoke a little bit about, the relationship of, you know, young man, older mentor, today's social media and things like that. Have you found some of those things to possibly be a distraction to you putting your all into becoming a pro?
Can you say that question again?
Have you found the distractions, you know, such as social media, of course, you know, the young guys,
oh, no.
You know, things like
no,
that, I mean, you know, Have you found some of those things to be a distraction from your dedication to boxing?
No, right now I have no distractions. I only have one goal, and that's to be my opponent April 19th right now. I have no distractions, no social media distractions.
Now, do you watch tape on your opponents, or do you leave that up to Donald and your team?
No, I leave it up to Don. And I watched a little bit. I watched a little bit, but not a lot.
Tell us a little bit about your style and what made you get into boxing.
Well, what made me get into boxing was because I discovered I had talent. You know, I knew I could fight, and I just knew that I just needed to learn how to box. I'm a smooth boxer. I got good defense, good offense. I'm slick, I'm smooth, and I'm smart, and I punch hard.
You got a ring name?
D-Mac.
And you know, was there a particular reason why you chose that? Has that followed you through the amateurs, or it was just it kind of put on you?
It was put on me by my mom when I was young. Everybody in my family got a nickname.
Okay, and your family? Do you have any other members of your family that are into boxing?
No, just me.
Don, getting back to you and your relationship with this young man. So you mentioned how tall he is and how you have to kind of show him how to get the leverage on his punches. But just starting out, this just being his pro debut. What are you kind of looking for in that squared circle, this being his first time out?
Okay, well, first let me preface this by saying that D-Mac is a man of few words. And he and I are like almost polar opposites. I don't stop talking to him, and you have to squeeze words out of him. And I'm telling him that that's something you have to get out of, because people are going to be coming at you all the time asking questions. You know, and I'm a writer, and I say I do the talking and the writing, and he does the walking and the fighting.
Hey, that's fine. This just happens to be a show where I don't do all the talking. I try to let my guests talk, to me, the show is not about me. It's about the people that I bring on the show.
Oh, I understand.
So,
of course.
Might have a little different approach. I don't know.
Yeah, I can tell you. You asked me about what am I expecting in his debut, and like I was saying before, people always ask me, "Is your boy ready? Is your boy gonna do this? And your boy gonna do that?" And I say, I've learned from a coach's perspective. I know what he should do. I know what he can do, but I won't know what he will do until he does it. And so he if he goes out there relaxed like he seems to be every time he's in the ring, you know what? Like I really pay attention to how his demeanor is when we go to different gyms. Because we go to some place, he likes to go to places where there's a lot of, where he's out of his comfort zone from our own gym. And he gets up in there and he boxes guys, but he never asks how much experience does the guy have, how many fights does he have, what does he weigh. That doesn't even faze him. He gets up there and he does what he does, and he's a very relaxed fighter. It's very smooth, and like I say, he's like a miniature Tommy Hearns or Junior Jones. He punches hard, and he gets good leverage on his shots. And really, that's not something I had to teach him. He always was a good puncher.
Defensively, we know sometimes tall fighters,
mm-hmm.
have some deficiencies, especially when they're fighting guys a little shorter than them,
and right.
they don't know how to
right.
keep the guy on the end of their jab. Have you
mm-hmm.
found this to be something that you had to teach Devontae?
Well, I just beat him over the head, taught him about the jab, you know, because we have a couple of short guys in our gym that like to try to press him. And I told him that a good stiff jab will normally stop a guy like that from running in. Or just don't give up too much of your height, but sometimes you do have to get down just a little bit to get the proper leverage on the shots. And a lot of times with those little guys, they're kind of tight. They come in like a little in a turtle shell. And my boy's a devastating body puncher. And I tell him, sometimes you're not going to be able to get those body shots off with these short guys. So he just, you know, work on getting a stiff jab, moving, giving some lateral movements, you know, just don't stand in one place too long. Make the guys make mistakes. Make those little guys lunge for you. And once they lunge at you, then you can go ahead and do your work.
Yeah, you know, just kind of going through the generational thing here, it seems like most of these young fighters now are taller, stronger, in most cases faster, than the guys of generations past. And what I'm trying to ask, for a generation that seems to be longer and bigger, have trainers had to adjust to the size of these youngsters coming up?
Well, I think it is, and I think it's across the sports world. You know, almost any sports, these athletes today are bigger, stronger, faster, and that just seems to be something that you do have to adjust to. Like for, I'm old school, and like I told you before, that I grew up in Philadelphia. I went to the gyms with Joe Frazier, Gypsy Joe Harris, Georgie Benton, Benny Briscoe. You know, guys like that. And not only are these guys today different physically, but a lot of guys don't have the dedication. And I think it's because, like you mentioned before, you asked D-Mac if he had any kind of media distractions and things like that. Well, those guys back in those days, as you know, they didn't have those kind of distractions. They fought. That's what their livelihood was. But these guys, you know, you got guys like Devin Haney promoting his own shows, you know, guys that want to do this. They want to do 5 or 10 different things. And sometimes it's hard to keep them focused on the boxing.
Yes. Yes, that's definitely true. We do have a lot of young men now that seem to be taking on promotions. And I think that, you know, everybody wants to try to do this Floyd Mayweather thing, you know,
right.
My own promotion and this and that. But you're not making $300 million, you know, for a fight.
Exactly.
It took a while to get there, and there was a lot of, mm-hmm. you know, bumps in the road and whatnot. I mean, you know, you can look at Floyd's history, you know, I mean, not just his social history, but, you know, just how he climbed up to where he was. The social media, the Floyd phenomenon, I would even throw the Adrian Broner hairbrush in there. I mean, you talk about dedication, but we also, maybe some of these young fighters lost respect for the game, as far as, like you said, like, you know, the guys like Joe Frazier, they dedicate
mm-hmm.
themselves to the game.
That's right.
These guys seem to be dedicated more to the money. But the money's not always going to be there.
Right. And I don't know if I would say that they don't have a respect for the game. I just think they don't have a good knowledge of the history of the game. They don't appreciate what the guys before them have done. You know, they act like what they're doing is what they started. They don't know the roads that were paved by the old timers. And they act like, you know, this is what I'm doing now and is always going to be here. I'm going to be able to go out and make rap records. I'm going to be able to do this. I'm going to do that. I'm going to have my own Facebook, and I have my own YouTube, and I have all this kind of thing. And, you know, I think that's more of it than this guy just not being respectful. I just think they don't think that they acknowledge the history of the fights. They don't read about it. You know, I got D-Mac looking at a lot of old time fighters. You know, fighters he's never even heard of, but he's looking at these guys and he's learning. Every time he sees a guy, he learns something from these old timers. And I really appreciate that, and he's starting to appreciate it as well.
Yeah, I had some old timers and some inductees into the Indiana Hall of Fame, and I was surprised that a lot of people didn't know who Tom Boom Boom Johnson was. I'm like, you know.
Marvin Johnson, right?
Huh?
Marvin Johnson.
Tom Boom Boom Johnson. Remember?
I know who he is, but you said Indiana?
Yeah, he just got inducted into the Indiana Hall of Fame. He's from Evansville. But,
Isn't Marvin Johnson from Indiana?
Right. Marvin Johnson, I believe.
Yeah,
Marvin,
the Warrior, man.
And Lamon Brewster, I believe they got inducted last year for the inaugural.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I know Lamon. Uh-huh.
Yeah. This year it was Harold Brazier, Tom Boo Boo.
Oh, yeah. I remember all those guys.
Like I said, a lot of the young fighters, that they don't know the history, but you also find that, so-called knowledgeable fans don't know the history either. I don't call myself an expert, because I learn something every day. So, I do a show and I learn as I go from gentlemen like you. Donna, tell me, in all your years looking through boxing and watching, what does it take for, that guy to just kind of catch that gleam in your eye? Because, you're around good boxers every day. What does it take to find that great boxer?
Well, get a guy like from afar, when I'm not even working with him. See how he's working on his own sometimes. To see if he's looking around to see what else somebody else is doing. Sometimes you can steal things from other people. And are they doing things like that? Or are they just out there just messing around, hitting on the bag and waiting for the bell to ring so they can stop and so they can walk off and start talking? Or whether they're looking at their cell phone every chance they get, things like that. Dedication is something that I don't think you can instill that in a fighter. I think you just have to – it just has to be there. Now, I'm not one that likes to say a fighter or anybody is born with certain things, because I don't know how anybody can say it, because you don't know it until after it comes out, because they say somebody was born to be a champion. Well, if he didn't fight, you would have never known whether he was born to be a champion or not. And I don't think there's any – I've heard a lot of guys say, the minute that kid walked into the gym, I knew he was going to be a champion. And I say, man, look, when that kid walked into the gym, all you knew was that he walked into the gym. That's all you can really, really say, it's a fact. Because if the guy didn't turn out to be anything, then what are you going to say?
Okay, very, very interesting approach there. Because you have heard that, I knew from the time he walked in the gym, from the time he put on his gloves when he was 6 years old, of course it sounds good, and that's
sure, it makes for good reading. It makes for good reading.
yes, it does.
It makes for good reading, like saying Muhammad Ali went 11 rounds with a broken jaw against Ken Norton.
right, But, it's the stuff that legends are made of, right?
Exactly.
Getting back to Deontay, you said you were working out with some of the shorter guys in the gym. What do you know about his opponent?
You want this for me or for Deontay?
Well, it's for both of you, but he can answer first.
Well, I know that I'm taller than him, and I know that I'm a better boxer than him. I've seen two of his amateur fights on YouTube, and, I know I'm a better boxer.
Well, now, watching YouTube is almost like sparring. When you get in the ring, it's not quite exactly what you've seen. How has Donald prepared you for that unknown element?
Well, just going around different gyms, sparring different guys. We go to different gyms. We go out a lot. We spar a lot. That's the main thing.
Don, what do you think about that? Going to different gyms, getting different looks. Do you find that much far better of an experience for him than bringing people to you?
Well, I'll be glad when we get to the point that we can bring people to our gym. But for now, it's good because we get out of our comfort zone. When you're in the gym with people that you see every day, you're speaking to them every day. You're handshaking, rubbing, hugging and carrying on. It's just people that you just know. They're almost like family. But when you go and you can get in the ring with a guy and you can almost tell that today he doesn't feel like working really hard, And then it makes your fighter hold back. But when you go to another gym, like we go to the east side where all these Latinos are, when we open that door and step in, they look at us like that TV commercial. When a fighter walks into the gym, everybody looks at him. They look at us and they say, uh-oh, if he comes over here, he must think he can get something. And so that's the attitude we work with, and that's the attitude we like. Get away from that comfort zone. And we get over there, and we know that we have to keep our mistakes at a minimum. Because they're going to try to hurt us, and we know that. And, we're going to do the same thing to them. And first.
Yeah, I'm glad you kind of mentioned that, because this is something that I've noticed, and maybe it's a good thing for boxing, maybe it's a bad thing for boxing, and I'm going to ask you. To me, the fighters seem to be too friendly. I mean, back in the day, Joe Frazier and Muhammad Ali were friends outside of the ring. But, you didn't see them, meeting at the bar and having a drink and going out dating the same girl and, having a rap team. I mean,
permeating sports, period. It's like basketball, like baseball. These guys are out with each other. They play in the summer league together. They're going out there recruiting guys to be on their team. It's a whole – you would have never have seen that back in the days of Bill Russell and Will Chamberlain. You would have never even heard about those guys trying to get together to form a team. It is totally different. And like people would like to say how Frazier and Ali were good friends outside of the ring. Well, let me tell you something. I knew Joe Frazier like he was my second brother. And I tell you, he did not like Muhammad Ali. He did not like him. We would sit down and talk about that, and he said, yeah, Butch, they're talking all that stuff in the paper, but I don't like that so-and-so. He said he talked too damn much to me. And he was serious about that. And then after it was over, the careers were over, then it was a whole new ball game. But, yeah, you're right about that. These guys, it's a different breed, And it's like, oh, man, when these guys are in the ring, they're touching gloves, and they make them. I mean, it really galls me to see stuff like that. But it is too much friendliness going on with these guys. I want D-Mac to be mean. I want him to be nasty. And I say, when these guys reach if the bell rings for the first round and this guy walks out to reach the touch gloves, I want you to try to take the top of his head off and let him know what we are here for.
Well, it was good talking to you and D-Mac. I do have my next...
Always a pleasure.
I do have my next guest in the queue, Mr. Blair Cobb. He's
all right.
Very familiar. He fights mean, as you say. So, Donna, you guys can say hello to Mr. Cobb before I let you go, if you'd like.
All right. Good evening, sir. Nice to meet you.
Hey, my name is Blair the Flair, and it's definitely not nice in that ring. Absolutely.
That's right. Absolutely. And I can't get used to it, man. Even on sparring, they do it. I can't stop it. But I say my whole thing is, why practice something that you know you're not going to do the night of the fight? The bad habits are hard to break.
I hear you, sir. Well, hey, I intend to have you back, and of course, I'm going to grab you for Sunday, too, because I like, your attitude and I love talking to you. So, hey, it was good talking to you and D-Mac. Any final thoughts you guys might have before we let you go?
No.
we're just looking forward to the fight. We sparred 8 rounds a day with 2 different guys. And so we're going to spar tomorrow, and even though our fight's only a 4 rounds, I'd always like to get those extra rounds in. And so we're just looking to get some hard sparring done. For the next 2 weeks, it's going to be a hard 2 weeks for him. And then the third Monday, then we start to taper off a little bit, and we're going to be super ready. And we got a lot of guys coming down there to see this fight. And to tell you the truth, the guy that we're fighting is a guy who's being looked at by the promoter. And I told D-Mac we can't make this thing close.
All right, sir. Well, like I said, we look forward to talking to you soon. And, hey, don't forget to tell us where they can find you on Facebook there, Mr. Dinkins.
Oh, yeah, Donald Dinkins. Get my Facebook going. I'm not too sharp on the rest of the stuff, but D-Mac is going to help me out with all that Instagram and the Twitter and all that. You know, I'm not up on that, but we will be.
All right. Well, thank you so much, sir. You have a great night.
My pleasure, and back at you.
Well, Blair, it's good having you back on the show. We always appreciate the time that you give us. I believe 11-0-1 now.
Yep, that's correct.
NABAF champion.
Yep.
Okay, so talk to us, man. What was it like, competing for the belt, and what's it like now that you have it? What was your expectations going in? Did the opponent bring the fight like you wanted him to? Talk to us, man.
Well, I had a great experience inside and outside the ring. It was a wonderful experience, a big step for me. The guy that I fought was an undefeated fighter that had a very good amateur background and a really good, like, pretty much all around background to test my skills. I had a ball in there. If you ever see the fight tape, I'm smiling. I'm instigating the fight while I'm fighting. I'm kicking this dude's ass left and right. I'm having a ball doing it. I'm having a real good time. I'm creating a good personality to go with my boxing skills, and things have turned out just fine for me in the professional boxing world. I came out there, if you want to play by play, I came out there with the razzle and dazzle. I pretty much intimidated him from day one. We came into the weigh-ins, and of course, as soon as I see him, everything just changed. My whole personality changed. Who I am as a fighter and just as a person completely changed. See, I can talk to you now as an intellectual, well-spoken, well-mannered person. But when that fight get a hold of me, you know, it's like a completely different person. I damn near don't even remember what happened. Like, even the fight itself, I don't even remember what happened in the fight. I have to, like, look back at it in the television broadcast and all that, in the videotape. It was a great experience, though. When I looked at it, I'm out there razzling, dazzling. I'm beating him up. I had a real good feeling that he was going to go out, that he was going to be done by round five. And that kind of showed, you know, that the referee was trying to stop the fight. A lot of things was happening in the fight. And you know what really surprised me when it comes down to my opponent was a very tough fighter. He was a very tough fighter. He's an Armenian fighter, and they're known with their lineage of being very tough. He took a lot of shots to the head, to the body, and he never gave up. He never let up. He had some success here and there in each round, but I was pretty much dominating every single round, except for the second. I felt like the second he definitely came out and tried to rally a comeback after the onslaught in round one. And then every round after that, I was pretty much taking over the fight, beating him up really bad. I had a great experience. They even have like a replay where like I'm doing my woo after I like daze and confuse him in the ring. That just goes to show you how much of a good time I'm having in the ring, and it shows my performance.
Now, how did your corner, did they feel like, you know, that perhaps you might have showboated a little too much and wanted you to settle down and get this guy out of there?
Well, the, like, I wasn't really showboating. It was all in the realm of fighting. And like, as far as the corner, my corner did a wonderful job on telling me exactly how to pick this guy apart, when to go forward, when to let off the gas a little bit. And they performed very well. I'm very appreciative of my corner. The people I had in my corner was Greg Hanley, Kevin Henry, and I had a pretty good team. Bones Adams and a really good cut man, the guy that makes war tape. He's incredible. I had an incredible team. And
Mike Rodriguez.
Yep, Mike Rodriguez, exactly. And,
yeah,
and it was wonderful.
He's from out here in L.A. He's a homicide detective out in L.A. I live in San Diego, but Mike's been on the show quite some time. We remember when he first developed the war tape. So, yeah, he's did Mike also wrap your hands?
No. Even though I did hear a lot of good news about him, I heard a lot of good word about his taping of the hands, but I went with Kevin Henry for this one, and he did a wonderful job on protecting my hands. I came out of that fight with no injuries at all, as far as my hand is concerned. In the fight, it was it got a little ugly towards the end. I was getting a little bit reckless and a little bit, you know, complacent because, hey, man, I'm beating this guy up the whole time. And he caught me with one good shot. And that's really one of the only things that really surprised me. He caught me with one good shot and in the last ending of the last round and forced me to go defensive to recover for like the last 30 seconds. It was a wonderful fight. And I was surprised that this guy had so much heart and courage to continue on, because I was making this boy quit. You know, I was making him quit. The scorecards are down. He's getting beat up. It's a lot of things. He got a big cut in his face. He got two cuts on the same face, on the same side of his face. You know, and big giant whelps. I was beating him down. You know, beating him down, and he still stuck in there, and tried to make it competitive at least. At least once in each round, and it was a really good turnout. It was a really good turnout. The crowd was like super super spirited for my opponent. Apparently, I was the underdog, the underdog by a wide margin, and it was very interesting. It was very fun to get out there and do my thing.
Now, I got to ask you. You know, I mean, I see the two fights in Las Vegas, your hometown. Once this is your third fight, I believe, in L.A. But you have had a fight in Philadelphia, your birthplace, and we know, you know, there's always that little tug, you know. Hey, you know, the boys in Philadelphia and you know, that rivalry between the East Coast and West Coast. What was it like going back to Philadelphia to fight after you've lived in Las Vegas? Were you accepted? Were you the underdog? How did you feel going back to your hometown?
Well, the fight in Philadelphia was a long time ago. And, you know, and it's been a whole lot of time in between each fight. So when I came to L.A., Los Angeles, I really didn't get the animosity towards, like, just me being a East Coast fighter as much as just being an outsider. In the fight, I was fighting this – my opponent was an Armenian fighter, and – I guess apparently there's a lot of Armenians in Hollywood because they came by the boatloads. It was like, I wasn't even in America almost. It was crazy. And the Armenians are really, really vocal and aggressive. They're a very spirited bunch of people, you know, with the cussing and everything. And it made for a really good drama, you know, as me as being like the villain. That's the showman and my opponent being the favor. That's not so much a showman as much as just a good, clean sportsman.
Now, you spoke of him being an Arminian, and you fought quite a few Latino fighters. Can you kind of tell me, you know, because I've, you know, like posed the question, you know, we have a lot of Eastern European champions. If you look at the light heavyweight division, all of the champions are, you know, Armenian or Russian or of that descent. Do you find that the Eastern Bloc countries present not only much difficult fighters, you know, in their tenacity, but do you find, you know, like you said, with that community, almost, I don't want to say, well, you described the atmosphere. It was almost like you weren't in America. So with that kind of fan base, how do you maintain that mental fortitude to put forth a great effort against these Eastern European fighters?
Well, in order to keep a great mental perspective, I always had this thing where I was always the underdog. I was the underdog for almost every aspect of my life. It's really nothing that can really compare to being an American. You get what I'm saying? Because you're facing fire between your own people, your own family members, your own neighbor, as they say. So like the mental fortitude can just come from just simply being an American and being different, being not a part of like any real social standard or social group. You get what I'm saying? Me as I am, I'm I don't even know what you would call me. But I'm very light-skinned and like I don't really fit in anywhere. So I was always an underdog in pretty much every place I was. You know, I didn't really fit in with the blacks. I didn't fit in with the whites. And like my Native Americans are pretty much extinct. So it's like, you know, at that point it's like, you know, like I was always an underdog and I always had that underdog mentality. So it always kept me hopeful. You know, that that no matter what, even a loser can win. Even a broken clock is right at least twice a day. So that's how I kept going forward, and I had the mental perspective. I was always strong. I always stood my ground in the face of diversity. I've faced many multiple different types of adversity. I've been rich. I've been poor. I've been homeless, and I've faced the trials and tribulations of true poverty and true oppression. You know, going back to Philadelphia, even like after the fact that like my younger life had no prior experience with those city streets, it made it very tough for me. So what ends up happening, I had to be tough. I had to endure something I had no real experience with, and it was very tough. I had to endure real poverty and real, you know, some real stuff that could, you know, that I didn't even know that even existed until I come back to that particular type of society, you know. And it was and that kind of stuff is what really builds that mental character, that mental drive and that mental character that can like, look, if I withstand this, then I can withstand anything else in life. You know, if I could survive homelessness, you know, I could survive anything. If I can survive poverty and true oppression, you know, nobody talks about like oppression, but hey, everybody talks about poverty, but don't nobody want no problems with oppression now. Like you got cops trying to kill you, got the city trying to kill you, hell, you even got food trying to kill you. You don't even know what, you know, it's a whole different atmosphere. You know, I had no clue, and I had to endure it. I had to survive. It was all about just surviving the ugly surviving the troubles and trials and tribulations. So when it comes to boxing, I had to survive it. I had to survive all the hard times in order to get to this particular point. So when it comes to another guy, that yes, he might have a better career, he might have better backing, he might have a better record than me, but he's not going to outwork me. He's not going to beat me. Why? Because I've been through way worse. You know, I'm not going to just waver and go silently into that night. And that's the mindset of a true champion, I believe, that I carry.
Now, you've had one draw, and it was against Mario Esperanza, I believe it was. What was that experience for you? Because up until then, you were on a winning streak. I believe you had all KOs or TKOs. You had only had one or two that had went to the distance. So what was that like for you, even experiencing a draw?
It was a learning experience. You know, all experience is learning experience. It was a big learning experience because I was forcing my body to stay in the 140 division for so long that my body has been just been beat up, and it couldn't, like, when it came time to make that weight for that fight, it could not make that weight. Like, I've been training year round for almost 20 years. You know, so then, like, my body needed a break. And then the moment it needed a break, I was in a fight. But then when I got in a fight, I had to make this weight that I couldn't make, you know, and I broke my body down to make it. All throughout the training camp, I'm incredible. I'm knocking out sparring partners. I'm looking impressive in every aspect, even my mentality. But when it came to making that weight, it was so difficult that, like, look, the fight was easy to me. Like, it I barely even got touched. You know, it wasn't the fight. The fight was the only challenging part was surviving the fight. But the fight was easy. But the thing that really killed me was after the fight, trying to recover my body from all of that weight loss. It was such a detrimental factor to lose all of that weight that myself, have decided not to try to make that weight anymore because it is too dangerous for my health. And on top of that, it makes my fights look horrible. I don't perform. So with that being said, I changed up and moved up in a weight class. The fight with Mario was at 140. Everything else has been higher and pretty much at walk-around weight. I walk around 152, 153, but I'm training year-round, and that's why, you know. So, and I barely have fat on me. Like, I have very little fat. So when it comes to 147, I can make it easier, and I can just focus on just the fighter and just the fight. I can focus on just the fight. A lot of these fighters, and especially me in that particular time, is fighting more than one opponent. I got to fight the scale, and then I got to fight the mental perspective of just, like, I'm not even sure if I overtrained. You get what I'm saying? And then I got to fight the actual fight. You know, so having so many opponents in one fight is a bit too much and was a little too strenuous for me, and we decided to move up and wait.
At 147, we've seen, we have some great champions at 147, but you were talking about your last fight. Did you get a chance to watch Mikey and Earl?
Yeah, absolutely. They did a wonderful job too.
What did you think about, two aspects? One, Earl showed his boxing ability, which was something that I think most of us, I thought he'd take Mikey out in 10. I thought he'd kind of overwhelm him and try to take him out. So number one, what did you think about Earl's boxing performance, and number two, even though Mikey lost the fight, do you think that, that perhaps Mikey's stock in the boxing world went up?
I don't know. I think, yeah, probably a little bit for both. As far as Earl, I already knew that he had those type of abilities. I've witnessed him personally in the Olympic trials, and because I was there representing Philadelphia in the Olympic trials, he's always had like a pretty reasonable boxing skills. In that fight, what I've seen is a lot of good stuff. I've seen Mikey ability to block punches and to withstand Errol Spence onslaught and stop his punches, which makes me beg to differ. Like Errol Spence is not unbeatable, but Mikey definitely doesn't have the abilities to do such things as to beat somebody like Errol Spence, because all it took was just more jabs. Just like instead of throwing power punches, he just started to change up and fight with more volume, and that was pretty much it. As far as Mikey goes, I liked the way Mikey fought. He fought very well. He looked very impressive, and I think his stock might have went up a little bit, but he definitely does not need to stay in the 147 division, you know, because I don't think that's going to help him any. You know, it was a fight where though, like only Mikey really had something to gain. I feel like Earl really didn't have too much to gain from that fight outside of just like a good perks or whatever. And but it was very crowd pleasing. It was very pleasing to watch two guys. Mikey, he can't, like, you know, we already know his technical skills and his difficulties that he have with. In that fight, what happened? Okay, well, what happened was that Mikey is very skilled and has defense that's very good, but he only uses one type of defense. And what's that? He blocks with his hands, and that one type of defense is not good enough, especially when, like, the only thing you got to do is just punch with more volume. You punch with more volume and just a little bit of thud, then the guy that's blocking with just his hands and not doing a head movement, not implementing head movement, stepping, pivoting, any other type of technical defensive tactics, it will make it very hard for you to get off punches. So you can block everything, but you won't get off punches too. You know, and there's the same case with that happened with Manny Pacquiao versus Joshua Clady. Joshua Clady was able to block everything. Hey, his defensive skills when it comes to holding a strong guard was very good and very, very, very good. But he's not able to throw nothing back. That's the sacrifice that you have to make when you block with just your hands and your forearms. It makes it very hard for you to throw back punches. Because even when you want to time somebody, the simple fact that you got hit can throw off your timing and your So next thing you know, it, like every punch that you think you could get off, you can't get off because you're off balance by the time you throw it. And if you throw it while you're off balance, you're gonna get knocked out. So it was a very good fight though, overall.
So who do you think right now is the best champion at 147?
I think Errol Spence is definitely the top tier guy, and Terrence Crawford is definitely one of my other guys that I think is right there. I think that Errol Spence and Terrence Crawford should definitely be fighting for something, you know. But we got a lot of good guys. I mean, 147 have so many beautiful fighters. We have Terrence Crawford, Keith Thurman, Errol Spence. We got Danny Garcia that's still in the game. We have
Sean Porter,
Sean Porter, the guy that beat Danny Garcia. We have a lot of really good, entertaining fighters, and myself is coming up in the division. to stake my claim at the welterweight crown. So it's going to be very interesting in the next few years, especially with me being on Golden Boy's roster, to take some of that crown back to Golden Boy Promotions.
So what do you think, since you are promoted by Golden Boy, what do you think is going to be your schedule for this year? Two fights, possibly. Well, let's see. It's already March, so are you anticipating a couple more fights this year? Considering that you haven't had a lot of activity.
Absolutely, I expect to have at least possibly three fights. You know what I mean? But at least two. We're looking at fighting on May 4th for the undercard of the Canelo Alvarez and Danny Jacobs fight. That will be a wonderful thing for me to get that exposure. So we're looking for that. And Golden Boy is already talking about it and everything. So we're just looking to get things running. You can look at me. I mean, you can look forward to me getting a top tier level fight again sometime soon, and fighting for a world title in like the near future of like maybe next year or end of next year. So things are moving pretty good. I got a belt already, so. So most likely I'll be fighting for the NABF full welterweight crown and move up in the rankings and possibly looking for another a shot at a world title sometime soon.
Well, you know, we met you the last time we were down in Vegas, and I'm going to be back in Vegas come see you. Out there at Prince George, where you train. I'm going to be there for that, actually, that weekend. So it would be great if you do get on that card. We're looking forward to that card. And, hey, while we still have you, I'm going to ask you, pick me a winner, Canelo or Jacobs?
Oh, man. Well, it's kind of hard for me to pick a winner. I've always wanted to see this fight. I think both of them have a good shot of at winning. I'm a huge fan of Danny Jacobs. I love Danny Jacobs just as a human being, period. And I've always followed his career since when I first came to America. I came to New York, and he was like a superstar in my eyes. You know, coming from the Olympics and all of that stuff, he was phenomenal. You know, and he had his ups and downs in his career, but right now I feel like he's a hot commodity. He's fantastic. So as far as a winner, I say it's a 50-50. You know, and I can't really say Canelo's going to win 100%. I can't really say that Danny Jacobs is going to win 100%. But what I can say is that the fans are going to be winners 100%. And that's something that's great about boxing. You know, we haven't had this kind of excitement in a long time because of the Mayweather thing where, though, like, he kind of just picked you up and then throw you off a cliff somewhere and destroy all of your, it just destroy your whole happiness about fights, you know?
Yeah,
by taking certain types of fights and only taking them at certain times, you know, and I just love time that we're in.
Do we really want to see Manny Pacquiao Floyd Mayweather? Really, 240-something
no,
year
like
old
guy. I want Pacquiao to retire because he deserves it. He deserves to retire. He deserves to sit somewhere on a yacht somewhere being happy. You know, I know he likes to take care of his people. Honestly, I feel like he needs to be able to take care of his people in a different fashion where it doesn't detriment his and that doesn't like land him in being broke again. you know, because he doesn't deserve that. He doesn't deserve that kind of treatment ever, because he is the fighter of the decade. He gave us so much of his wonderful time. He gave us beautiful fights, unbelievable fights. He's my favorite fighter of all time because of that.
I'm still riding with Marvin Hagler, but you can ride with Manny. It's all right.
I'm a different generation.
You know, hey, but hey, man, as always, man, I love talking to you. Like I said, man, hopefully, you know, we'll get to talk to you again next time I'm in Vegas. And why don't you tell everybody where they can find you on social media? And anything else you might want our fans to know before we let you go?
Okay. Well, you guys, again, my name is Blair Cobbs. You can follow me at Blair Cobbs, BLAIR.COBBS on Gmail. I mean, not on Gmail, on Instagram. You can find me on Facebook, Blair Cobbs on Facebook, Blair.Cobbs on Instagram. All right. And hey, I'm the limousine riding, jet flying, kiss stealing, wheeling, dealing, son of a gun. And I'm having a hard time holding my alligator boots down. Woo! Flair, over and out.
All right, well, man, you have a great night, man. Talk to you soon.
All right. Take care.
That was Mr. Blair Cobbs. I'm going to make sure we get a final word from Mr. Mike Tyson before I leave up out of here. Let's see. Mike, are you there? What's up, Mike? I thought we had Tony here, I guess. Where's Tony? Tony missed us tonight. Well, anyway. Everyone, have a great night. Hope you enjoyed our guest tonight, Ernesto Rodriguez, the trainer for Jared Hurd. We also had Mr. Donald Dinkins in with his young protege making his debut in 3 weeks, Mr. Devontae McGowan, and of course, Mr. Blair Cobbs. We hope you enjoyed our show, and we look forward to talking to you again next Tuesday, right here on ZogCon with K9 Boxing. We hope that little K9 will bring the bell home tonight. This is, I believe, a qualifier. So we're hoping that he's successful tonight. Don't forget to catch us Sunday on the Weekend Wrap. With former heavyweight champ Layman Brewster, John Scully, and never can tell who might stop by at any particular time. So have a great night, everyone. Let me see. Is that the professor in here? Professor, are you there? A lot of familiar phone numbers tonight. Maybe I should adjust my glasses. But anyway, have a great night, everyone. See you next week. And if you want to catch us sooner, like I said, catch us Sunday on the Weekend Wrap. Have a great night. Look forward to talking to you next week.